This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Lawmakers are still in Raleigh in a new special session where GOP leaders hope to reduce the power of Governor-elect Roy Cooper. They called this session after concluding a third special session where they passed disaster relief funding. They did not disclose the purpose of the new session, but measures were filed that limit gubernatorial appointments, alter boards of elections, and change the judiciary. Roy Cooper says the session threatens public education.
If I believe that any of these laws that they pass hurt working families or are unconstitutional, they will see me in court.
Joining me now is WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff Tabiri. Welcome back, Jeff.
Always a pleasure, Frank.
Let's walk through some of this legislation that is currently under consideration. One bill that would take away some of the governor's appointment power. How does that bill work?
That's correct. And we should note that of the roughly two dozen pieces of legislation that were filed last night, there are a couple of real significance or real note, and it's not just one or two items. The House Bill 17 that deals with appointments that would require Senate confirmation, it's an 18-page bill. And essentially, the top-line issues here are that cabinet secretaries that would serve under a governor, normally the governor, Pat McCrory, appointed the head of several cabinets. Those are his secretaries. He appointed those positions, and they serve under him at his behest. And under this bill, it would change so that if Governor-elect Cooper were to nominate somebody or tap somebody to run a cabinet position within the state government, they would need Senate confirmation. Republicans say this is constitutionally okay. It's something that was on the books for decades. They moved the power away. They did not have confirmations for the last 30, 40 years, but they're moving it back now. And it's of note from a functional standpoint because if Governor-elect Cooper taps you to run a cabinet, do you really want to go through a Senate confirmation process where there are supermajorities in the General Assembly? You don't know if you're going to be confirmed, and you really don't know how hostile that that confirmation process could be. So it takes away kind of that unilateral appointment authority when it comes to cabinet appointments. It also reduces the number of staff positions under the governor from currently 1,500 down to 300 for Roy Cooper. So takes away, goes from, it's only 20% of the current staff positions. We should note that when Governor Perdue took office, that number was 500.
It was 500. So it was inflated by this legislature when Pat McCrory was governor, more who would serve at his pleasure. And now that he's leaving office, they're reducing that number back to actually less than what it was.
Correct.
Before I came into office. All right. So another bill reduces the power of the State Board of Education and increases the power of the state superintendent. Tell us about that one.
That is another bill that what Republican leaders have said to us, specifically Senator Berger's office, is that many of the what are being labeled as talked about in terms of being controversial provisions, there are similar pieces of legislation. If you look back in the archives, 17, 20, 25 years, that when Governor-elect Cooper was a member of the General Assembly, he supported similar things. And this would strip away the superintendent of public instruction's authority. Governor Cooper supported that when he was in the legislature, and this would, give a lot of the powers back to the state superintendent. Some of those jobs I mentioned a moment ago, 1,500 down to 300, some of those jobs that are budgeted for would go into DPI. And, of course, we should note that there has been a Democrat running who has been the state superintendent, June Atkinson. She lost an election in November, and a Republican has now or will now take that position.
All right. And when we get back to these appointments, as you say, that's a big bill, and it affects many, many positions,
right,
many boards and agencies, including UNC Board of Governors, the State Board of Elections, State Ethics Commission. Tell us about those changes.
So there's a whole lot going on here, and I think it is important to step back and note just this general scene of chaos. This is somewhat controlled. This is political theater, and this is what Republicans are orchestrating. How much of this is really going to go through remains to be seen. But yes, specific to the appointments, the governor would lose appointments to UNC boards of trustees. in another bill, but also related to appointments, presently the State Board of Elections is controlled by the executive branch. It's five members, and it has a 3-2 tilt to whatever party holds the executive mansion. A different bill, it's called the Ethics, Elections, and Court Reform Bill. This would eliminate the five-member state board, and it would essentially merge the Ethics and Elections Boards into an eight-member panel with four Republicans and four Democrats. Republicans say that this is a way to get partisan leanings out of elections, because elections shouldn't be partisan. The Democrats, or by and large many Democrats, are saying that this is an 11th hour grab. This is clearly a grab on authority, and the process has been, it has been quick without much transparency. That's happening just a matter of weeks before a Democrat takes the executive mansion.
Another proposal affects the courts, and of course, there have been a lot of speculation that this session was being called to pack the courts in the wake of the election in which the Supreme Court shifted its majority to Democrats, a sense that the legislature would tamper with the courts to minimize the effect, and that's just what they're doing.
Well, yes and no. They're not packing the courts. There is no indication that I've seen at this point that there's going to be an expansion of justices on the state Supreme Court. But instead, and just quickly, part of the reason that they're not going that route is because legal challenges may very well hang that up, and Governor Pat McCrory may not be able to appoint, in theory, an eighth or a ninth justice before leaving office. So under a current proposal, there would be more authority given to the appellate court. Now, we have a seven-member Supreme Court and, I believe, 15 justices on the appellate court. The Supreme Court is going to be a 4-3 Democratic split next year, but the appellate court has a Republican majority, so more things would move before that appellate court, and that is, the court altering that could have, some significance as we're talking about disputes over redistricting or elections issues.
So the court's very much on their minds when they put together this mm-hmm. agenda, an agenda that was not made public, but that they knew about since Monday, although we didn't know anything about this until they actually met in that fourth special session. Tell us how this session came about, and let's start there, and, sort of why they're in session at all and why they had to call yet another special session to push through this stuff.
Right. So we're in special session number four, but we need to go back to special session number three, which was called for by the governor in a proclamation last week. Pat McCrory said this was to deal with a disaster relief effort and any other measures that the General Assembly deemed appropriate. So lawmakers convened on Tuesday, and with, we should note, unanimous support, bipartisan support, they passed a $200 million relief effort for people that have been affected by the floods following Hurricane Matthew and the wildfires in the western part of the state. They then ended that session yesterday, and within an hour had reconvened for a fourth special session, and this to take up these unrelated disaster bills. And as we've seen, these are efforts, provisions, proposals to strip away some executive authority. How much of this will move through and is actually going to remove powers from the governor-elect, and how much of this is a shot across the bow, the Republicans reminding the governor that, hey, we have supermajorities and we run this place.
And the governor-elect reminding them that he will see them in court, calling what they're doing ominous. Also, State Senator Erica Smith Ingram, who's a Democrat from the northeastern part of the state, spoke out about this session.
We were sent here on the priority of providing the appropriations that were much needed in ensuring and making sure our citizens, our families who were devastated and impacted by Hurricane Matthew and the significant flooding, we were sent here to make them the priority. And now we are here to the tune of $42,000 per day on a ploy to court pack and power hack.
Senator Erica Smith Ingram, a Democrat from the northeastern part of the state, speaking at an NAACP press conference today. Also opposition among lawmakers, many of whom say this might be unconstitutional. Talk about potential legal challenges, Jeff.
There will undoubtedly be some sort of legal challenge, whether it's to the entire session, whether it's to particular maneuvers to reshape power or reshape appointment authority, that remains to be seen. We kind of have to wait and see what it is that comes out legislatively. It's interesting to note that some of these bills, if they are passed here, will then go to the governor. who is a Republican but has sued this body. He has sued, Pat McCrory has sued the General Assembly over separation of powers. So and there's an irony here, right? If something were to go to Governor Pat McCrory and he signs it so that Governor Cooper would have less power, we don't know if that would happen yet. And it's, I guess it's possible that the governor could veto this, and that, you know, that's a different scenario. We could have an override. We could it could all be bluster. It could all be for show. But the North Carolina governor is not one of the more powerful ones in the country. One analysis has it at 41st out of 50, and this certainly would make the governor here even less powerful.
All right, Jeff, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. Jeff DeBerry, WNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Thanks, Jeff.
Talk to you soon.
Just ahead, we're going to take a look at the opioid epidemic in North Carolina and what is being done to address it. And you'll hear that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.